It's the motherfucking Millennial Mija podcast.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Ken.
Hi, Barbie.
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 Okay, I'm here with my favorite Barbie, my neighbor Barbie, my Sarabi Barbie. She's my friend, and she's my favorite person to discuss movies with. So, of course, I had to invite her to go watch Barbie and do a podcast about it, because we love this movie.
Yes, we love this movie very, very much.
So introduce yourself. Who are you?
Oh my gosh. Okay. Hello, everybody. I am Sarabhi. I am Millennial Miha's longtime neighbor and friend.
You could just say Angie.
I want to say Millennial Miha, because that sounds somehow more important. I don't know. Not that Angie is not important, but, you know, creator versus creator, that way. But yeah, I adore this girl, and I adore the movie we just watched. And we are right now beaming in pink pride.
Yes, pink nails, pink. Okay, and let me tell you what this girl did. Yeah. Let me tell you what she did. She took me to this cute-ass movie theater called the Alamo. I had never been, but apparently I was missing out. Mm-hmm. And it's like a boutique theater, and she found out they were doing promo, and she got me a Barbie lunchbox. Okay, with a Barbie thermos that comes in it. And I couldn't be happier. Like, this is the perfect way to watch Barbie. Yes. And we just want to talk about how much we love the movie, but we also want to like go in on it, because this movie is like a cultural phenomenon. Mm-hmm. Sorry, that was an annoying noise, guys. This movie is a cultural phenomenon, and it has so many layers. So many layers that I told her it was my idea to take notes. Yes. And I didn't even take any.
Yes, but I took some notes for us. Yeah. And then we came back and we did some good old-fashioned homework as well. And it turns out that it's not just all pink cuteness. There's a lot of massive genius marketing going on in the background. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of care taken. They did not just bank on a bunch of people just throwing pink at everything and hoping that it'll work out.
And hoping cross it their sticks. Fingers. Yeah.
Oh my God, I just realized you have a pink skull in your room, and that makes me so happy.
On my altar, she's talking about.
Yeah.
We're literally just recording this on my iPhone, guys, because listen, we just need to get it done.
Yeah.
Because I feel like there's been so many, I've created so many excuses for myself when it comes to recording. Like, oh, I wasn't recording because the mic wasn't blah, blah, blah. No. You can literally record in a quiet room with your iPhone and talk to someone you love.
Yes.
And discuss and do exactly what we normally do on a normal night when she comes over and we just talk about movies. But I wanted to make sure that this specific conversation was recorded, because this movie has cultural impact. Mm-hmm. And I cried.
Yes.
I cried so much.
Yes. We cried. We laughed a lot.
So much.
But we cried a lot
too. I feel like I laughed so much.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because Ken is like freaking hilarious. The Ken men. In general, the way they have written them, it makes me so happy that they have addressed the, you know, the himbo in you know, the male bimbo of
I am Knuff.
I am Knuff. Like, it is. And finally, they've addressed the concept of the whining of the friend zoned, and the complaining of the fallen soldiers in the friend zone. And and they have done such a good job of it, like without making a spectacle of it, you know, because sometimes you can see stories like this kind of completely deviating, losing track of what they wanted to talk about. And in the end, it kind of just blows up into let's talk about feminism, but not really give the audience any closure at the end of it. They didn't do that. They spoke about it, and they're like, no, we're going to give you some closure too, because you deserve that after, you know, like 2 hours of being so invested in an actual Barbie land.
Yeah. Oh my God. But the reason why it was so brilliant, and the reason why we were all so in it, is because it was created by people who actually played with the Barbies in the way that if you only know these intimate details if you played with Barbies.
Yes.
So it's true. Like if you were a kid that was like around them, or like it, but you weren't like into them. Yeah. There's little like the weird Barbie thing. Yeah. Like that's so cute. It was so cute. And then also we were talking about at the theater when they, the way they talk too. Like when Ken was like,
I thought I might stay over tonight.
Why?
Because we're girlfriend boyfriend.
To do what?
I'm actually not sure.
Like, saying girlfriend, boyfriend is such a kid way of saying things. And, like, yes. It takes you back to yourself at that age and, like, what made sense. But then also making it make sense now and connecting it, somehow make giving it all meaning.
Yes, absolutely. 100%.
So there's this, like, thread of the humor that you have when you're a kid that, like, stays funny but somehow gets smarter.
Yes.
You know?
Yes,
absolutely. So it just, I feel like this was inner child work for all of us.
Yes, 100%. Especially, you know, the women, the boys. I don't know who played with Barbies, because I played with Barbies in India. Mm-hmm. So I had one Barbie. My aunt had gifted me my first Barbie. It was Dr. Barbie. Mm-hmm. And I ended up getting my doctorate. I have a literal Barbie. Have a literal arc, right? Like it blows my mind sometimes. I never thought about that till maybe a week ago, where I went, huh, what was my first Barbie? Because I had one Barbie, which was original Barbie. I had a Rapunzel Barbie, and then I had the Mycene Barbies that kind of came and went. They were like, not brats, but they were not traditional Barbie either. Uh-huh.
They were a little spicier.
Yes. That was spicy Barbie. Yes. And Their Kens were spicy too, and you know, and they didn't look very preppy. They looked different, and it blows my mind the impact that toy had, because everyone who understood, like, I'm thinking about the first scene, right, where they show the girls who are sick of their baby dolls, you know, the, uh-huh. the infant yeah. dolls,
and which was Planet of the Apes. Oh, inspired by Planet of the Apes. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even catch that.
Read that. Okay. I didn't catch that on my own. When I read that, it totally made sense, and I was like, yeah. Oh yeah, because then we learned later on in our little like session of research that we just did that a lot of the scenes were homages to other movies.
Space Odyssey. I mean, what amazes me is the level of detail they went into it, because Barbie, I mean, okay, so again, this is probably like country versus country thing. Certain countries had the painted toenail Barbies. So their toenails had a little bit of pink on it.
And they were white.
Yes.
Like this.
Yes.
Which has totally come back so much with millennials. Like,
yes. The white toenails and the white paint. And then there were Barbies that didn't have that. And there was a significant price difference in that, very weirdly. I remember that as a child in India. If you wanted the toenail painted Barbie and not just like a simple flesh foot or something, then you paid a little extra for it. And they got that detail in the first scene. I'm like, are they going to catch that, or they're just going to put like a random Barbie there? No. They had the white toenail.
I don't think anything. So the cinematographer, we talked about that.
Yes.
We talked about the specific Barbie pink is not just any pink. It's mm-hmm. Rosa Mexicano. Mm-hmm. And so it's like Mexican pink. And it's Ramon
Valiosere.
Mm-hmm. I think. And he
invented he invented it in the 1940s.
Okay. Say the story, because I can't remember now.
Okay, so this is why I love Angie, because she's the one who told me about it, and then she said, are you taking notes about what I'm saying?
It's the executive functioning part of it. It's so fucking annoying. Like, I know this is important to include, but I can't remember exactly what his name is and exactly why.
Okay, guys, welcome to the podcast of Neurotypical Barbie and Neurospicy Barbie.
Last night I was on Hinge, and I started talking to some guy named Edwin, and I forgot what he said. And do you know what this girl said?
No.
Say it.
Okay, so he said something corny. He said, do you believe in love at first sight within 5 seconds of matching with her? I'm like, slow down, my mans. And so I said, can we say his name?
Yeah.
Because Edwin's trying to get into that bedwin. And Angie's been laughing for the past 24 hours.
Oh my god, it was so good. It's hilarious.
So there's, we have Ken's
but
trying
he's
to
just
get
a Ken.
It. Yeah.
He's just a Ken. So boring.
Yes.
Dude,
yes.
Think about how boring it would be to be a Ken.
I know, it would be ridiculously
because
boring.
That is what Barbie did. Okay, so let's go back to Barbie. So I loved the relationship between, first of all, the girl and her mom, America, who did a phenomenal job, by the way. Like,
you have to never get old, never be rude, never show off, never be selfish, never fall down, never fail, never show fear, never get out of line. It's too hard. It's too contradictory. And nobody gives you a medal or says thank you. And it turns out, in fact, that not only are you doing everything wrong, but also everything is your fault.
And I loved the fact that what woke every Barbie up was reminding them who they are. And showing that, like, the importance of speaking it to you or to your sister to, like, bitch, wake up. Like, don't forget you were the president.
Yes.
You do not need to be cutting nobody's steak. Like, please.
Yep.
Get it all the way together. Like, so I love that, because especially, too, because that's the medium that I specifically use, is, like, speaking or, like, writing with words. Mm-hmm. And so it just was a reminder of how important words are. So what did you think about that?
I actually appreciate so much that you brought that up, because I have watched movies which focus on, you know, women empowerment or feminism, or, you know, tones of feminism perhaps, but they don't quite get the dialogues enough, you know, for it to sound normal. They sound jaded. They sound like someone read an academic paper somewhere and, you know, when started quoting a bunch of different professors and researchers, rather than just talk like how you would talk to a friend, a sister, you know, a person.
That's what that monologue sounded like.
Yes, it sounded like a conversation. I didn't have siblings growing up, but I bet if I had an older sibling, that's what she'd have told me to shake me out of my stupor if I was ever in one.
Yeah.
I think about every time, you know, like the influential people in my life tend to be women, you know, my bosses, my mom, my friends, you know, they tend to say things sometimes which are so phenomenally deep and profound, but it doesn't sound like a speech, you know, where you are trying to raise the armies of women together. No, you're basically saying, okay, get yourself together. Please wipe the ice cream off of your face. You have a Cheeto in your hair.
No, the essence of what you're saying, I understand so much. Like, the most loving, straightforward, like, it sounded like it was no longer we were watching a movie. Like, they were like, cut. Like, and then she just had to talk to her. Like, get her friend together.
Yeah.
And that was how it that was how it felt being witness to it. Like, you felt like you were in on this conversation that maybe not everybody else in the room was in on all the way, you know? And, like, we were a part of this secret, super secret bestie club. Yes. I think that's someone's podcast. But
yes, yes, abso-freaking-lutely. And I love that you said super secret bestie club. So let's talk about the original white savior Barbie. Let's talk about Greta Gerwig, because she is the director. She's had a massive influence on the way this movie was going to be made. We spoke about how she made this other movie called Frances Ha, which had a pink poster. Unknowingly, she manifested the Barbie universe into being, because Frances Ha is in black and white, but the poster is pink.
Yeah.
And it shows her dancing and, you know, getting it on, and she's this blonde white savior woman. Well, not in the movie, but, you know, this movie.
The girl says that to Barbie in the movie. And she's like, it wasn't me. I didn't come up with this. It was your mom. But that's funny.
Yeah. And very weirdly, what you just now said, like, oh, there was a secret universe. Everybody in the theater was not in on that conversation. Anyone who has not been in that dialogue with another person who's basically really caring for you, but has to be harsh in that moment, because they need to shake you out of your stupor. She has said this in Frances Ha in a very different way, where someone asks her, oh, what do you want out of love or life? And she goes, you know, I want to be at a party and I want to go with them, but I don't want to be with them in the party. I want them to shine separately and I want to shine separately. And every once in a while, I want to look across the room, not necessarily in a sexual way or a romantic way, but in a way which is like,
I remember see this,
you, right? And she says, I see you and you see me and you are my person in this life. And there is this secret universe right in the middle of a crowded room.
Oh, she does say that.
She does say that.
Dude, and that's exactly what she says to Ken in the end of the movie.
Yes, she does.
Is there needs to be, what if there's a Barbie and There's a kin. And
yeah.
you need, oh my God. Yes. We are geniuses.
Yes.
Wow.
We are total movie geniuses. I don't even understand why we were not.
Greta, did you even know that about your own movie?
You didn't know nothing, Greta Gerwig. Damn it. You have to bring the brown women to put this together.
Greta, girl. Yes. I think you did a great job. I'm proud of you. Yes. And I thank you for this movie. And everybody, obviously, it was a group effort. I feel like it was, like, low-key, she was, like, that was her also monologue. Barbie's, like, last thing, like, how she's, like, trying to self-actualize.
Yeah.
That's because when you're directing a film, it ends up in it, like, you can't help but it being your perspective.
Yeah.
So we're, you know, see, just the same way that Frances Ha was from her perspective at the time.
Yep.
I think in the same way where, like, recently, the poem that I submitted to LA Times.
Yes.
It was not the poem I would have chosen even a year earlier if someone were to ask me to submit a poem about belonging. Because my perspective at that time was I don't belong and I will never belong. And I'm so much, like, this from this perspective of, like, the outside looking in, which is even what I say in the poem.
Yeah.
But I just don't feel that way anymore. I remember having felt that way and I was so real, but I don't feel that way anymore. So I didn't want to put that as my perspective into the world by, like, the first thing people are going to hear of me in a while is going to be this.
Yeah.
And so I didn't want it to be this, like, come from this sad, broken place, because I was there, but I'm not there anymore.
Yeah.
So that's why I chose what I chose. And that's coming out, I think, next Tuesday.
Ooh!
So I'm so excited to see the video, dude.
Oh my gosh.
Shout out to Jessica for this opportunity. She submitted me to Delos, which is like a new division of LA Times.
Mm-hmm.
And it is celebrating Latinos and Latino stories. And shout out to Pepe Teodoro, who is the artist that's going to animate my poem for Delos, de Los Angeles Times. So I'm really excited. And what's cool even about Delos is what it means is de los dos lados, meaning of. So there's a saying in Spanish that's ni de aquí y ni de allá. I'm not from here and I'm not from there. And so there's this whole, like, borderland ideology from Gloria Anzaldúa which I learned about from her. She talks about, like, you're not from here, you're not from there, but you're from this middle portion. And so, but this de Los Angeles is representative de los dos lados. I'm from here and I'm from there. Wow. Which you see the...
Yeah.
How I went from there to here.
Yeah.
And it's just so cool that I, when I read that was what they meant with the name, I was like, wow,
That's beautiful.
It's like we all moved into that space of feeling de los dos with each other, like, kind of as a group, I guess. I don't know, like, group consciousness.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyways, how we get here? Who knows? Where are we going to go from here? Nobody knows.
Hey, this Barbie's proud of this Barbie.
Yay.
I'm so excited for what's coming next for you. I really am. I had the honor and privilege of listening to what will be the poetry. And guys, if you're watching Angie's space, my goodness, like, it is, I cried all three times she read it out to me. And that is, oh my goodness, I don't know why, but there's something going on now thematically with creators where I think it's the millennial effect. We're all talking about our relationship with our parents.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of what happened in Barbie too. She ended up having this conversation with her creator, Ruth Handler.
Yes.
Who, by the way, was a daughter of Jewish immigrants.
Oh, wow.
So everything she did... she was a fierce businesswoman, and there is a running joke about how she got into some kind of tax evasion stuff, but in the movie. But
that had to be true, otherwise it wouldn't have included it.
Well, yes, but what is fascinating to me about the Barbie and Ken dynamic, and I wonder if this was done intentionally. Barbie was named after Ruth's daughter, Barbara. Guess who Ken was named after?
Who?
Barbie's brother. Ruth's son's name was Ken.
Oh.
So it makes complete sense that Barbie's not interested in Ken.
Oh, yeah. That does make sense.
Oh, my gosh. It makes so much sense. And I'd never put that together till I was doing some research after I watched the movie. I'm like, oh, I wonder where Ken, you know, came from. Apparently, Ruth Handler saw all these action figures that Ken had and then looked at her daughter, and she had like these almost infant-sized dolls, but no action figures. Uh-huh. So, you know, when there's this joke where, you know, if you tell a guy like, oh, where are your G.I. Joe dolls? And he's like, it's not a doll, it's an action figure. We can say the same thing about Barbie. It's not a doll, it's an action figure. Because it was inspired by an action figure. Mm-hmm. The dolls were the infant baby things that you could actually throw around and do stuff with.
Yeah.
Barbie, on the other hand, was more of a collectible. And you could play with her. But it would be better if you weren't rough with her. Otherwise, she would end up like weird Barbie.
Yeah. Weird Barbie is such like one of those other parts about the movie that we talked about. Like, you, if you played with the Barbie, you know about that. And it's so funny. Yes. It's like these inside jokes.
Yes.
That not everybody gets. And I love that. And I, okay, we also have to, we have to talk about a big part of the movie, which is the backlash to the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Which I, dude, it is, I love it. I love it because it's, it makes the assholes reveal themselves so easily. Yes.
It's the perfect litmus paper test.
Because if you, there, I went to the movie, I saw the movie with the guy.
Oh.
And he laughed the entire time. But then I get on Instagram after and I'm like starting to look at Barbie stuff. Dude, people are upset. They're like, this is an attack on men. Not just, just Ken, but all men. And it's like, this is, we did not have to make Barbie political. And dude, I'm going to look up some of the things. What have you seen?
I've seen how someone put this fantastic tweet where they said, a lot of people are upset that Ken was used like just her accessory and just an extension of herself, but didn't really have any real lines of his own or real identity of his own. I wonder where else I have seen that. Oh, wait, every other movie ever. But instead it happened to the Barbies and not the Kens. And I love that they are, you know, the way we expected the negative reactions to come. You know, you expect, oh, people are going to call it, oh, it's going to be childish or something. You never expect people to take offense about a movie which is profoundly not about them. It's about everything but them, quite literally.
And that, but that is what, if you don't understand the movie, I can work with that. But if you're threatened by the movie, run away from him.
Yes, yes. Run away fast and hard. Find us. And we'll take the Cheetos out of your hair.
Yeah.
Because, that is not okay.
And the Cheetos out of your hair?
It's just, I've had versions of this happen to myself and to my dear friends where, you know, I found them in a situation of, like, how Barbie was, where she just kind of fell to the corner and became, like, stiff. And then Beyond Barbie goes, she's not dead. She's just having an existential crisis.
Dude, and I feel so seen.
Yes.
Like, but I think we all do, because I think millennials are at this unique place where we have, they told us to go to college, right? So we fucking go to college. Mm-hmm. And then we get all this extra information. Then we start to use that information to analyze ourselves.
Yeah.
And then when we start analyzing ourselves, we can't help but analyze our parents.
Yeah.
And then so we have this part of us that wants to hang on to nostalgia, but we also have this part of us that knows we need to change. So like America in the movie where she's like, oh, like the part where I felt it when her mom, when they're driving and like we're trying to get away from Will Ferrell.
Yes.
And she's like, Mom, wake up. And then she goes, I am awake. Like, because she's like, that represents kind of like Gen Z looking at millennials as like not woke enough.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But when they wouldn't be as woke as they were unless we were as woke as we are, which maybe ain't as much as you guys, but we started this shit. Yeah. So.
We mothers stand still so our daughters can look back to see how far they've come.
Please. Yeah. Yeah. You know, so I love the commentary of Barbie and her mother being Ruth, but then also it playing out in another dynamic of America and her daughter and their relationship to each other and Barbie.
Mm-hmm.
What about the other Easter egg we saw on here about the girls, Sasha and her friends representing the Bratz dolls?
That made me so happy. I didn't realize that. Angie pointed that out. And the fact that that's a... It was so well done because you see them pouting at the lunch table, which is a brats thing to do.
Their name are brats.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't play with brats. I think it was after my time. So I think I was I think I was already in high school, like when brats came out. So, or I was bigger. Like, I wasn't playing with dolls. So I just missed out. So I was the Barbie era, like the Barbie generation.
Yeah.
And then now the girls who were playing with brats mm-hmm. thought Barbies were lame. But to us, Barbies were the shit.
Yeah.
So we're like, what the fuck, you guys? Barbies are fucking awesome. And so yeah. it just represents this actual experience
yes.
that, especially if you are a millennial that has a kid, mm-hmm. are experiencing right now, maybe.
Yeah.
And so I think it just like, I think it made people feel seen. No, it made millennials feel seen.
Yeah.
Because it was for us, by us.
Yes.
And it was very like, and but that's what I like about it, not everybody getting, being in on the joke, or yes. like, you know, being part of the inside yep. joke.
Secret
of it.
Universe.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. Yes. 100%. I mean, just think about whose Barbie it was, right? It was America's Barbie. Margot Robbie is America's Barbie. Margot Robbie is a white woman.
Yeah.
America is not.
Yeah.
So I know there's going to be a bunch of non-millennials who are going to start taking offense to that immediately, going like, oh my gosh, like, you guys are glorifying, you know, the Caucasian.
No, but at our age, we didn't have it other than Teresa, which came later.
Yeah,
so it's like...
Yeah, and honestly, the Indian Barbie that came, I remember seeing her. She had a gorgeous ghagra choli. It was like a red ghagra choli, like, you know, like very beautiful Indian outfit. But she looked like, you know, the girl that goes to Coachella, who's white and thinks she knows about chakras, but she doesn't know about chakras. And she has Namaste Bitches somewhere tattooed on her.
Oh, fuck.
And, you know, and she did. And you know what? My mom looked at that and said, I'll get your grandmother to stitch a ghagra choli for your current Barbie, but you're not getting an Indian Barbie. Because it was quite clearly a white Barbie in an Indian outfit, you
yeah.
know? So, I mean, you have to give this to the millennials, right? We could take very obviously a blonde, blue-eyed Barbie doll and go, that's me.
Yeah, and still...
You know?
But also then fucking look in the mirror and then be like, that is not me. That was such a big part of our self-hate. Like,
yes.
they don't have... They, I'm sure they hate themselves for their own reasons or for many other reasons that we created also,
yes.
you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
But they didn't have the same self-hate issues that we had because
yes.
they have so much, much more representation than
yep.
we did.
Yep.
So they have their own issues, I'm sure,
yes.
that we don't even know about yet. But they don't have our specific issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a specific brand of self-hate because it's completely whitewashed.
Yes. Yes.
And so the further you are away from that whiteness or that white standard or that stereotypical Barbie,
mm-hmm.
like, that's to the degree which you hate yourself.
Yes.
And well, or which you hated. And
uh-huh.
now we're finally getting into a place where we are also benefiting from the representation that Gen Z is getting.
Yes.
But we're also trying to reckon the programming that
mm-hmm.
we've been, the brainwashed, that we've been brainwashed with.
Yes.
You know? So it's like, it was a perfect commentary on the place where we're all collectively at.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, because we can't all see eye to eye on a lot of things because we don't have a lot of the same experiences.
Sure.
But Barbie was one of the very few experiences.
It unified us all.
Because it was in every country.
Yeah.
Barbie was just fucking transcended
yeah.
and the same way they made this movie do that.
Exactly.
So it's like, oh, I love it.
It was everybody's everything. I mean, the doll, the song from Aqua, like everything about that universe was so inclusive, you know, of pretty much any person who was in that generation experiencing, you know, the Barbie movement, the Barbie movies that came out, the Barbie games. There were these Mattel CD-ROM games. I still have.
Oh, my God. Where you could do their makeup and stuff?
Yes,
and
I have the one where you can fashion design.
The CD-ROM.
Oh,
dude, that
my
was
goodness.
Big, oh, my God. It, CD-ROM? Just that alone is just enough to take you back.
Yeah, and I adore that they gave those little details to us. Like they had the Dr. Barbie that had like this pink wand, and it had like this X-ray that was basically the same for everyone.
Oh yeah.
And they had a chess set, but it
They had the same houses, like the exact same houses. That they got the details right.
It blew my mind. And they had a chess set that had pink, dark pink and light pink, pawns on it. And the best part about this, I'm just realizing, Barbie never saw herself. Because Barbie Land doesn't have a mirror.
Ooh, girl.
So we see...
You said a lot there.
Right? Like, we see ourselves in Barbie. Barbie never saw herself.
But Barbie never saw herself.
And stereotypical Barbie hates herself for being stereotypical Barbie. And we grew up with stereotypical Barbie for the most of it till the other versions came out. And it is a massive identity crisis of sorts. And just imagine.
You got me with that one.
Right? And then you have like a bunch of people going, you're so beautiful. You're so beautiful.
Yeah.
Quite literally.
We can't see ourselves.
We can't see ourselves.
Wow.
It is the poetry.
So Gen Z's like the mirror. And because then she was in the movie. Uh-huh. And when she's like, oh, my stupid drawing. She's like, they're not stupid. Yeah. Like.
Yeah. They're good drawings, Ma. Like, they're crazy and dark, which you pretend not to be. And I love the call-outs that happen. You know, there's this wonderful post that I think you also found on Instagram. It said, it is so hard to raise your mom. I'm so curious to know what this version of this challenge is for Gen Z, like when they come of an age where they will be raising their moms. Millennials are right now in the middle of raising their moms. And this is fascinating to me because I was telling Angie the other day, my mom said she wanted something that costed, I kid you not, 89 cents. And I said, oh, let's get it. And then she kept telling me, you need it too, right? Because she didn't think investing 89 cents in her hobby was worth it.
If she was only going to be the one that was using it.
Yes. And she needed to make sure that her child used it too. And I was thinking about the past, couple of years. And this is before, I moved away from home and stuff. That woman used what was left. So if there was, material left for my clothes, she would make that into a blouse which would go with her sari. If there were paints left from my kit, she would use that for her own hobby. She didn't buy stuff for herself.
Yeah.
And that's the part of the moms right now who are the mothers of the millennials, who are basically
boomers.
Now, yes. And
the boomers.
The boomers are booming, man, because they they have no idea what is going on because the millennials are like kind of, right? Because I saw my mother's face explode with shock when I said, I got this for you and I got another one for me. And she didn't know what to do with that information. And she said, so I'll take this with me everywhere. But are you sure? Like, what if you need a backup? Imagine a person seeing that
please tell them what it was. It was a fucking stamp.
Yes, it was a wooden stamp that she needs for her artwork. Okay, and this woman is a prolific, like artist. Like, she does stuff constantly with all her art tools, and it fascinates me how she was raised, because she was raised with siblings. So I think that also mixes things up a little bit. When you have siblings, you think about, the other person versus I was an only child. I don't necessarily think that much about anybody else, in the family dynamic of things. Why would I? Yeah. I didn't have to.
Yeah.
And you get to see that in the Barbie movie as well, where Barbie has to come back for the sake of her sisters. But she doesn't want to keep serving her sisters.
Oh, yeah. She's like, I'm just going to sit here until one of the more leadership-oriented Barbies takes control because I can't do this shit. She was done.
So someone is going to snap out of this and then just solve it because I can't do anything. Yeah. And I think, this is a fantastic place where we can talk about, like, comparisons of things. So, how people, they'll sometimes look at a person that they really admire and they really respect. And this is... I don't know if this is true of all generations, but this is a millennial thing. There's been a bunch of stuff that the millennials have seen, right? Like with the Me Too movement and then a bunch of really horrible people coming out and coming out of basically showing us that they have been pretending to be good people this entire time.
Virtue signaling.
Virtue signaling. There we go. And the amount of our heroes that have fallen from grace is fascinating to me. We've had a lot of people that we loved and we admired and respected, and so many of them have fallen from grace. And what I find fascinating is that we are a generation that has to cope with that in the same timeline. It's not like we are, you know, in our 80s and we found out. We were teenagers, we loved them. And now we are in our 30s and we hate them. and we've lost respect for them. And we hate that they've made us hate them so much. And this is the kind of, I don't know, like when you think about that, right? Like, oh, if they couldn't do it, how can I? That's exactly what Barbie went through. She's like, if President Barbie gave up and she got brainwashed, what am I going to do? Mm-hmm. She gave up because someone she admired, got brainwashed and got bent into the cult of Kendom.
Mm-hmm. Wait, we have to like go a little deeper into the funny parts of Ken, because it's just so many moments. Yes. Ryan Gosling, you were perfect.
Yes.
You did a great fucking job.
Yes. And no one wears fur like you, my man. No one wears fur like you. He wears fur so well.
No one does beach like you, Ken. Ugh.
You do beat so well. And you know what I find so stupid and cute about it? Mm. He got really into horses after he learned about the patriarchy. and everybody had like a horse slideshow running in the background in their Casa Dojo houses. And he had like this massive truck and it had a little horse plushie tied to the hood of it.
Too good.
And then you see the Barbie houses and they are pink and, yeah, they have all the Barbie Dreamhouse elements, but they're actually all unique. Versus when the Kens took over, every house looked the exact same. Mm. And I wonder if this is some kind of tip-off to, like, how, you know, the Barbies versus the Kens' minds work. Like, basically part of America's speech where she says, you need to fit in, but you also need to stand out. Mm-hmm. Which is basically what the Barbie Dreamhouses are. Like, she fits in, it's a pink house, but you also need to have, like, your own unique touch to it. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Kens don't have to worry about that. You have a horse slideshow? Great. So do I. You have a mini fridge for the brewskis? So do
I. No, the beer, with the brewski beers.
Oh, my God. Remember his rant and meltdown about how the small fridge's freezer doesn't work?
He's like, what did he say? And the freezer's basically useless. It's so...
I loved the way when she was getting catcalled, and she had to stop over there and go, we don't have any genitalia.
Oh, yeah. No, just that whole interaction, where he's like, the fact that he felt respected. And yes. I like the fact that they chose Century City. I don't know why that was so funny.
Yeah. Because Century City sounds like something futuristic to them. But anyone who has been to Century City knows that is not true.
And they have a lot of like buildings, entertainment shit.
Yeah. And what I find amazing is that just because someone asked him the time, he got 6 watches on his
hand. It was so cute. Those little details about it were so funny because it was like how a child would understand things.
Yes. Yes. Pretty much. Yeah. And I love that he has like this weird competition, this rivalry with another Ken.
Yeah.
Who is played by... he's the new Marvel hero. I forget his name. He's the new Marvel hero.
It'll come to you. She has a crazy memory. Like, the fact she's been quoting the movie.
and his rivalry with this
other And Ken, other movies that she hasn't seen in years.
I know.
And I can't remember anything.
I know. Frances Ha, it gets there.
Your executive functioning is, like, really good, huh?
Yes. Because, you know, I'm from India.
You're like, I didn't grow up eating sugary fucking cereals. So I didn't get ADHD, bitch.
You know, yeah, and let's say I did. They would look at me and go, no, you don't.
Yeah.
So you know what I mean? Like, that is you know, the Indian, you know, training the system of, you know, neuro spicy versus neuro ketchup. They don't care. Like, they just want to have...
They're like, cool. Anyway, cool story, bro.
Yeah, it's like, okay, yeah, you have, you know, difficulty paying attention. That's fine.
You still got to get the same grade.
Yeah, we'll still grade you the same. We don't care. And you know, I mean... We might be going a bit off topic, but yes, there is a fascinating difference between the Barbies in India and the Barbies in US, the Barbies in India, they had similar accessories, but you didn't get to see the Princess Barbie that much. Those were rare. So I think they kind of, you know, found their audience and they went with it.
Yeah. These ones work. The rest, they can have these bullshit Barbies.
Yeah. But the rivalry between Ken 1 and Ken 2, remember the part where he says, I double betted Ken that I could go to the real world. And Barbie goes, why? I said, well, I had to, you know. So Ken is so cool. And she goes, Ken is not cool.
He's like, to me.
To me, he is. And you see the same real world universe where the daughter goes, oh my God, what about Dad? And she goes, ah, he'll be fine. Like, in every universe, no one cares about
Ken. Like, the man is inconsequential.
And I think...
Because the irony is that the reason why it was so impactful is because if you've never had a man be the center of your world, then you do not understand this movie. Because when you're in it, it feels like life or death.
Yes.
But then once you're fine, somebody fucking reminds you who you are, and you step back from that, and you're like, holy shit.
Yep.
What a fucking waste of time that was. Like, I can't believe I literally wasted my beautiful, happy life.
Yes.
Like, obsessed with somebody who's literally a Ken.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much.
Like, if you've never been down and out about a man, then you can't appreciate this movie.
Yeah. That's true. And, so the other Ken I'm talking about is Simu Liu. He plays Shang-Chi in the Marvel Universe. And he's a gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous Ken. And I love that they have shown them as the rivaling Kens, you know, the Asian Ken versus, you know, Caucasian Ken. And and now with the stuff that is going on, you know, with I guess, you know, the Asian actors getting so much attention and you know, and all these Asian pop bands and boy bands getting attention. I think they've kind of shown the face off of what was first, like, people were crazy for all the white boy bands, right, that came out. Like, yeah. Globally, people know about...
Oh, I know where you're going with,
you
this,
know,
yeah.
Like the Backstreet Boys and then Blue and NSYNC then whatever else.
And
NSYNC. And, oh my God, remember when they said, you know NSYNC? They're all Alan. Oh, gosh. I would not be surprised if in the sequel...
Even him.
Barbie and Alan got together. Because he was really helping them. He really wanted them to bring Barbie back to Barbie land. And he wanted to escape too. But yeah, I think they're kind of showing that, you know, the competition between what was, you know, glorified as beauty for men, which was generally like, you know, Caucasian men, versus, you know, now what is happening with the change of, like, of course, like, you know, think about BTS, right?
Yeah,
they come and they crush the game and like what we consider attractiveness now. Any of the actors that are come from K-dramas, you know, Simu Liu from Shang-Chi, like there's so much happening right now which is not about,
well, social media has changed the way fame is gatekept.
Yes.
Yes. And by who? Mm-hmm. And so now that there's a global stage, we start to see that we have so many more options than a bunch of fucking Justin Timberlake clones.
Yeah.
And when you have that many different options, like, for example, how Bad Bunny did crazy ass numbers, broke all types of records last summer, with his album. And it was the first time anyone had ever done that. Mm-hmm. But if you think about what's different now than in any other time, mm-hmm. it's not anything. Like, there's more talent. It's the same amount of talent there's always been.
Mm-hmm.
Now we just can see it.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have... Nobody is churning out CDs and albums. And I mean, they are, but we're also able to access information super easy and super free. So now we just...
Yeah.
Have more choices.
Absolutely. I mean, when you think about the story of Simu Liu and how he probably landed this Barbie role, it was like manifestation, kind of. He tweeted at some point in his life where he went, Marvel, it's time for, you know, a Marvel superhero, you know, from China, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Shang-Chi happens.
Mm-hmm.
And his fame in Shang-Chi, of course, he's done like so many other things, But that kind of landed him this role, you know, opposite Ryan Gosling in Barbie. And mm-hmm. there's so much beauty in you know, what you just observed. We have access to the world now, and that exposes a lot of
it levels the playing field.
Yes, it does.
Not completely, because the people who own it still are white, but
yes, I mean it,
but in a lot of ways it levels the playing field of like, exactly. If we're gonna do the People's Choice Awards, mm-hmm. then let's let the people really choose.
Yep. Yeah. And let, you know, people get to see, you know, all kinds of Ken. We saw all kinds of Ken and all kinds of Barbie.
That's
which mm-hmm. was amazing. That made me so happy, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was very, very impressed by the way they pulled that off, because I'm like, huh, I wonder.
It was so effortless too. Yes. And it was so unlike. Unobvious? What's the word of unobvious?
Like, it was sublime.
Mm-hmm. Why does he say that?
He gets excited because Barbie wants, or makes it seem like she wants him back. Oh, that is, but yeah, there is such beauty in the narrative of the story. There's so much, I mean, of course, are the sets beautiful? Absolutely.
Oh, God, set design. Dude, that was, for me, was like 2 hours of dopamine. The set design and the costume design.
Yeah.
The references of the old Barbie costumes. Yes. I love shit like that. Yes. Like, they just got it so right.
Yes.
I fucking loved this movie. Two thumbs way up from Siskel and Ebert.
Mm-hmm. And to think, I mean, that the cinematographer did Irishman. And then did
Prieto.
Yeah.
What was his name?
Roberto.
Yeah. Roberto Prieto.
Yeah. And he did it for Irishman. And then he went ahead and he did Barbie. And I think he's the true Barbenheimer. Because when you see Irishman and you see what happened in Barbie, like, oh my God, the same person came up with like the color scheme and the mood and the ambience for this.
Mm-hmm.
And the level of detail is amazing, because the sand is not sand. It's pink plastic that has the texture of sand on it. And I have seen this in several Barbie kits where it was part of like the Barbie Dreamhouse collection or whatever, where there would be like a beach on the side with I don't know, like plastic coconut trees and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And And the other one that you pointed out, the BAX for the airport.
Oh, yeah.
That was so cute, too, where they replicated LAX, because technically Barbie lives in Malibu. And
mm-hmm.
and they have really nailed the amount of details that were required for this movie to make sense to us.
Speaking of Malibu, let's talk about the marketing.
Oh, yes, let us.
Because there has never been anything like it.
Yeah.
The Barbie merchandise explosion, partnerships with everyone you could fucking think of. Like, we can't even walk anywhere in a store without seeing something pink and just assuming it's a Barbie collab.
Yeah.
Because they had Barbie collabs with everyone from Target to who else? I can't think of any of them right now. My brain always goes blank when I need it.
They were thinking about
Fred.
Fred got nasty with me, but that's okay. So they have done, I mean, they got Target, they got all the fashion brands come in and join in the game of like designing clothes for Margot Robbie, which were about, you know, like, which were Barbie themed, which were from the yesteryear, you know, Barbie vintage. They've gone into the archives and they've recreated outfits for Margot Robbie for every appearance of hers. Dubai had a 3D poster of Barbie. They basically just had how, like, she steps out in the first scene, exactly that way she's stepping out of a billboard, in a 3D billboard in Dubai. And it's amazing. Oh, and US ran out of the color pink because there was so much happening for Barbie. They ran out of the paint color pink. There was a shortage.
Really?
Yeah, during the marketing of Barbie. And what is amazing is the second you come out of the movie theater and you see something pink, we walked into a parking lot that had pink.
Oh, way yeah.
And we thought, oh my God, they've colored the parking lot pink.
Not even, there is an actual Malibu Barbie dream house for rent on Airbnb.
Yeah.
That, so there's this really cool Variety interview that somebody, who is this by? Because I loved the questions they're asking. Because I was so curious about all these questions about, It's called Inside Barbie's Pink Publicity Machine, How Warner Brothers Pulled Off the Marketing Campaign of the Year by Rebecca Rubin for Variety. And it talks about how they... It's okay. For example, when did you start to notice the Barbie marketing was resonating in a big way? We had a lot of internal discussions about what the right first piece of material is. And if you guys all remember, it was when everybody was posting the filter, the this Barbie does whatever, this Barbie does this, this Barbie does that. Mm-hmm. And I was telling Sarabi that because my nature, I'm an Aquarius, my nature is very like, what's contrarian?
Yeah.
Like, so even though I wanted to, I did it because everyone else was doing it.
Yeah, the Barbie filter.
But everybody saw that. Mm-hmm. It was like, and it was, it exploded super organically.
Yes.
So that was their like first, so it says, we had a lot of internal discussions about what the right first piece of material was. When is the timing of it? How much of the story should we give away? Each time we released something, the movie was getting to a new level of engagement in the culture, which is so true. Mm-hmm. What is some you've seen some Barbie marketing?
So one of the main things that I mean, and it's not as much as marketing as just a bunch of people saying, oh, we are doing Barbie too, is just stuff. Was pink. There was just stuff that was available that wasn't pink. Stationery that I had never seen in that color before. That particular rose pink color was available. I went to Olvera Street and there was a woman selling Barbie milk.
Oh no, let me tell you about my people. They just missing an opportunity for no merch. I'll tell you that right now. Go in front of any game, sporting game in LA.
Yeah.
Set up with merch of the whoever the concert is, like they don't miss an opportunity, okay? And it's always good too, like it's always cute. So shout out to all the street vendors.
That's awesome.
Unmatched hustle, as we got what I will say.
Oh yeah, that is amazing. It was so when I saw that she had like the Barbie sticker on the jar that had the pink milk, and she said, oh, this is Barbie milk. And I'm like, oh, what is in it? Say, oh, strawberries. And it was just strawberry milk, but you know, she had a Barbie sticker on it. And I was so amazed by how quickly people caught on, like, oh, if someone sees something pink, they're gonna buy it.
Yeah.
And that was my first observation, that people who had nothing to do with Greta Gerwig or the production house or the movie itself, they were, you know, selling Barbie stuff. And that blew my mind how quickly people caught on that, oh, this is going to be a thing.
Yeah.
Let's deal with it. Gap came out with a bunch of pink apparel. The short dresses, which are not at all girly. Mm-hmm. They were in pink and they had a little side pocket with like a little bit of sparkles on it. I was like, hey, they have really like, they want to, you know.
All the brands are leaning into it. And that's what was cool is that, like, I mentioned that I tend to be, like, more contrarian. But even with, like, this touched such a nerve with so many of us that I didn't even care about that tendency that I have. I'm like, I love this.
Yes.
I had just gotten my pink Telfar bag, which I bought even before Barbie came out. And I just was like, I am ready for this cultural phenomenon. I'm ready for this cultural moment. I want to participate. Like, because it's just been such a, like... such a positive experience. Yes. Like every girl, like me and my friend Jen, we went to the, we had such a fun weekend. We went to the Art LeBeau tribute concert, which is, do you know who Art LeBeau is?
No, I don't.
So Art LeBeau is a radio host for like 50 years, and he would do the dedications from like the cholos and the cholas of like all the decades basically. And so our community looks at Art LeBeau as like a part of the community because he would do the dedications from like shout out to Sad Girl from Flaco, from like, it's just like this part of our culture that's like really tender because we love these oldies, like these lowrider, this music, it's a feeling that's so central to our culture, our Chicano culture. And so he passed away this year, or was last year. Mm-hmm. And they did a dedication tribute concert to him, so all the like oldies, all the oldies singers and DJs came out to like pay homage to him. Mm-hmm. And so we went to that. And then we also, earlier in the day, we went to the Bridge Fest on the 6th Street Bridge, which is also like a, it's coming from Boyle Heights into the Arch District. Mm-hmm. So it's like a symbol of East LA. Mm-hmm. And it was a very like celebration of Chicano experience. You know, there was lowriders and lots of Chicano vendors. And me and my friend Jen, like, we were just in such a good mood with other women. Like, not that we never are, yeah, but it was just like, you recognize, you're like, look at all the Barbies. Like, oh, you feel so like, I don't know, it gave you some type of this, like a spirit of sisterhood that since I saw the movie, I have not gotten rid of or even wanted to get rid of.
That's amazing.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, and even us, we said, hi, Barbie. Like, it's just a thing that if you're, if you say it, you know it. And it's like a reminder of sisterhood.
Yes.
And it's so beautiful. And then we saw the Kens today.
Yeah.
The gay boys at the movie theater. Oh, oh my God. First of all, their outfits. We should take pictures with them. Yeah. But their outfits were to die for.
Yes.
They
had worn pink dungarees and sparkly shirts. And they were just looking phenomenal.
Yeah.
And someone had dyed their hair that beach blonde dye. And they just, they were having the best time. They were squeezing themselves into the box, the Barbie box.
Yeah.
We got a couple of pictures in there too. It was adorable.
And we got the Barbie blush box. Because my friend, you're amazing. I swear, because she went the first time with her mom and she got, they got those, the place that I went didn't even have, I was ready to take my Barbie picture and there was no box at the movie theater I went to. So I'm so glad I got to go and actually have the real Barbie experience.
Yes.
With my Barbie.
I know.
I'm so glad that we went, and I'm so glad I got to discuss this with you, because you are somebody who I love going back and forth with you,
because
we make each other realize things or like connect the dots for each other. And it's like,
phew. Yeah, yeah.
So I just,
we matrix each other hard
for sure. Like, what?
The reference in the movie where Weird Barbie offers her the pretty heel and the sandal,
the Birkenstock specifically, was hilarious.
That was just perfect. And she goes, do you want the heel or do you want the sandal? And Barbie goes, I want the pretty heel.
Yeah.
And it is the, I think it is the visceral, the visceral reaction that you have to that is, I didn't realize that was from The Matrix till Angie did some research and told me about that. I'm like, oh my gosh, yes it is,
because it's the blue pill. Blue pill. Yeah.
And in that moment when Neo takes, you know, I forget which pill for the reality, in that moment you go, really? You really want to dive into the unknown? Why would you do that? And the fact that Barbie had the normal reaction, saying, no, I don't want to dive into it. I don't want to know shit about shit.
She keeps saying that. because what it ends up being is like, is the self-actualization part of it. Like, she starts having these moments, like, does anybody ever think about dying? Like, it starts very small until you can't ignore it anymore.
Yeah.
And that's the consciousness, like, that we gain for when we go from being so unsure of ourselves and, like, not, and wanting to distance ourselves from who we really are, to going from, I'm not fucking doing that shit no more. Now I'm gonna go in the complete opposite direction and try to actually find out who I am. And in the way we find that out is by going back to being a kid.
I always knew that Barbie would surprise me, but I never expected this.
That's why I teach the inner child workshop with the one we just had with Diana, where we did, oh my God, it was so cool. Shout out to Diana Bravo from Rooted Thrift, who I collaborated with. We did a inner child workshop at Crane Studio in El Sereno. And we used little golden books to do a collage activity. Mm-hmm. And it was just so powerful. It was so powerful and it was so perfect. And all of her stuff, she specializes in like 90s toys and nostalgia. And like 2000s, like she'll have like Lizzie, she'll have shit that you didn't even remember you remember.
Yeah.
Like, and it sparks. So for me, even the pictures, if you go on her Instagram right now, go look at Rooted Thrift, just looking at the pictures of her, what she was doing, sparked my creativity and like my, just sparked. And then she posted, I want to do an inner child workshop, but she had an idea of doing it her way, and then I was like, we need to collab. And it was just like instant creative fireworks. And so when we got together and we had this idea, we truly brought it to life. But on the road to figuring out who you are, you cannot get there unless you go back to who you were before anyone else tainted you or anyone else influenced you or any of the world's like rules molded you somewhere else. Like, who were you when you were playing with that Barbie? What were you imagining? Like, what's the world you thought was real? Yeah. You have to go back to that in order to find out who you really are. Yeah. You know, you have to go back to. And so when she's saying, I don't want to choose I want to choose the heel. Like, I want things to stay how they are, perfect and nice and familiar and fun and pink and perfect.
Yeah.
Which is, that is the natural reaction. Nobody is, like, super excited about the journey.
Yeah.
Because it's scary and hard. Mm-hmm. And the real work is not just going to Angie's fun workshops and doing collages and, you know, looking at all the pretty stuff. You also have to go to Jen's workshop and do the fucking breath work and the actual work of self-actualization.
Yes.
Of learning who you are and becoming real, like becoming human, like she tells her in the movie, like, now take my hand and feel.
Mm-hmm.
And because she can't explain to her how to be a human.
Yeah.
Or how to stop being a doll.
Yeah.
All she can do is make her feel. And then it's like that montage, which is
the cast and crew's actual memories and photographs and videos from their home movies and stuff.
Too beautiful.
Greta Gerwig did her homework, got a straight A and...
A plus.
She just... That woman, she really cared about how she was going to do this, which makes me so happy.
It's really clear.
It's so clear. If you see her photographs on set, she dresses like Barbie on set as well.
Like, I thought she was wearing, like, the pink jumpsuit.
Yeah,
I saw that.
And she's like, okay, I'm going to create this ambiance of Barbie as much as I can. So you are going to see a camera in front of you. But there's going to be a lady in a pink jumpsuit, you know? So you're completely, even as actors, completely immersed in the experience. And one thing that I admire so much about how Greta Gerwig introduced the concept of self-worth and self-identity, it's not as simple as someone telling you you're bad at stuff. Sometimes the damage is even if someone tells you, oh, you're good at this, and your whole identity and self-worth is somehow gets attached to that. Where, you know, stereotypical Barbie, oh, you're good at being stereotypical.
Yeah.
But then she's not stereotypical anymore. She broke a bunch of rules. She is depressed.
Yeah, she doesn't know who she is anymore.
She doesn't know who she is anymore. She's getting cellulite. She, like she said, she's now like weird Barbie. And the way she says, but I'm not pretty like stereotypical pretty anymore. Now something has changed. It's because everybody told her, you are supposed to be this. You're good at this.
Mm-hmm.
And the break, I think, in that identity is amazing to me, because I grew up thinking I was good at a particular thing because I was told I was good at a particular thing. It was mostly teachers, you know, who really wanted me to get straight A's in my class and stuff like that. Like, they really wanted to make sure that I cleared my exams and stuff. So my brain was always, oh, I'm supposed to get good grades. But you grow up one day and there are no good grades to get. So what are you going to do then?
Mm.
And you have a boss who will say thank you, and you don't know what that is. That grade A, is that grade B? You don't know what that is anymore. And I think that growing up, which is amazing, that they're shown that repeatedly in the movie, and the themes in the movie are so beautiful, like, and the parallels to our real life. So okay, I'm not making this up. Angie got me a present today. She got me this gorgeous present of these beautiful stamps. I mean, when I say beautiful, I mean, you guys are listening to me and you're going to think, oh, it's just stamps, Surabhi. Like,
how no, they're vintage stamps.
They are beautiful.
They found me.
Yeah.
And I had to give them to you.
They really did, because we were talking about journaling the other day and I was like showing
her. Well, and you were told me a story about your mom with the stamps.
Yeah. And Angie, you know, being Angie, somehow, you know, in her reality of things, you know, manifest this beautiful stamp set, vintage stamp set. And I look at it and I go, oh my God, this man. And it's not just that they're the pretty stamps. It's that I got a gift. It's not my birthday. You know, we are not celebrating anything. we are just Barbies. And we, you know, we got each other.
We are just Barbies.
We are just Barbies. And we just.
We deserve toys.
Yes, we do. We deserve presents. And the movie, ding, 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 to prepare for the role in a method acting kind of way and to get Ken in the mood for Ken, Margot Robbie would leave a present with a pink bow out of Ryan Gosling's vanity room.
Oh, really?
Every time they were on set. So he would open a present from Barbie.
Aww.
Every day. And it made me so happy. And I'm like, oh my God, this is so cute. And in my mind, when I heard that factoid, I went, oh, I wish I came to a present for no rhyme or reason. And a couple of days later, I just get a present from Angie. See? For like nothing. Just for existing, which made me so happy. And
thank you, Barbie.
Yeah, thank you, Barbie. I mean, and when we are calling each other Barbie, we're not even calling each other the doll Barbie. There's this gorgeous dialogue in that where she goes, so what are you? Said, well, I'm stereotypical Barbie, but there is the rocket scientist Barbie, and then there's,
yeah, we're all Barbie.
But they're all Barbie. But Barbie is a rocket scientist. And I think the sense in that is so gorgeous, right? Like, I have this amazing friend who is, she is so good at writing and destroying. And I say this, you know, I say this with so much love. This woman, this Barbie, can write four lines and then give me Barbie level existential crisis.
Barbie trauma.
Barbie trauma for the next couple of days where I go, oh my God, I need to find Ruth Handler and Ruth Handler's ghost and figure out what's going on over here. Because I bawled like a baby when I heard that. And I just, you, as a species, we are taught to compete with each other. And this is not just true of Barbies. This is everybody, right? But the way the movie talks about Barbie, it's more like, oh, because one of us is a rocket scientist, we all benefit from the rocket scientist.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yay, space.
Yay, space. Exactly.
And because one of us is a doctor, we all benefit from Dr. Barbie. Angie is a poet. We all benefit from Angie being a poet. And I mean, for me, that is phenomenal. Like, Angie repeatedly says, oh my gosh, I love your observational skills. I love that, you know, you take notes. That is a very typical research thing that, you know, doctorate candidates have to do. They have to, like, think from the perspective of everything. Mm-hmm. And when I hear Angie saying, oh, I love that about you, rather than going, huh, how can I one-up her?
Uh-huh.
You know, which happens. Even when you're not intending for it to happen, it happens.
Yeah.
And the sense of community, not in the like, oh, we are one big gang of Barbies. No, the sense of community in the true sense. Like, if you have something which is amazing, thank goodness, because now I have that amazing access as well.
Yeah.
And they have nailed that on the head in the movie. They're shown Barbie attending all these important meetings. She like, oh, we vote for so-and-so. President Barbie has a interview with reporter Barbie, and she sees the space rocket, whatever, they're in space and they're waving to her. There's a mermaid Barbie who's like hanging out being herself. There is so much detail in this movie, which it breaks my heart that it breaks my heart that we were not prepared for the genius of this movie. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
No, like, I think it's actually better. Because what I love about Barbie, well, what I love also too, I think I have a poll. Well, first, before I go to that one, I want to say, it sums up what you were saying by, there is a poet named Ariana Bosco who hosts a open mic, and her line is, you shine, I shine.
Yes.
That's it. Yeah. That's what Barbie says, is you shine, I shine. Yeah. So it's like, they literally live in this world where it's like, what is, like, competition with what?
Yeah.
Because I don't want to be President Barbie because I'm this Barbie. Yes. And so we're all Barbies. Like, yeah. There's no such thing as it being a competition.
Yeah.
And so you shine, I shine.
Which is awesome.
But what I like about it is that, what I do like about us not being prepared for, because that was what fucked us up the most.
Yeah.
Is that true. Because we were almost expecting it to be shallow. Like, because it's Barbie.
Yeah.
And we never really, like, got the, or we weren't prepared for it. But, like, I have this poem called Boobs Versus Brains, where I talk about
okay.
being, I like really love being underestimated. It's like Ooh. The best feeling in the world. I cannot explain to you when someone thinks, someone looks at you and you can see this happen. Yeah. You can see someone look at you up and down,
yes.
study all your eyeliner and your boobs and your all that. And yeah. they, you can see them draw a conclusion about you.
Yes.
And then you open your mouth
yeah.
and their whole shit is like, their head spins.
Yeah.
It's the best feeling in the world. And that's what yeah. Barbie did.
Yeah.
That's what the movie did. That's what Greta did. Mm-hmm. That's what America did. And Margot. And yes. you guys.
Congratulations. Applause. Congratulations on doing something truly iconic.
Thank you, Barbies.
Thank you, Barbies.
But I'm so glad we got this conversation out because.
Me too.
And I'm so glad we did it while it was still fresh.
Yes.
Because the movie was just too perfect.
Yes.
And I am so glad that we got to have this conversation on the podcast, and I will be inviting you back for another episode when we find something that we have to talk about.
Oh my god, okay.
It will probably be a movie. Ooh. You're welcome, Barbie.
Thank you.
Okay, and until then,
I talk about movies too on.
Yeah, tell us about your podcast.
Oh, so I talk about movies as well on my podcast, and I will be having Angie over soon to talk about a specific set of movies which I have in mind. I've not discussed it with her, but I put the idea together while we were having this conversation.
Cool.
The podcast is called Kremchis, and it's basically
spell it.
It's a weird spelling. It's Krem, like C-R-E-M-E, and then Chiss, C-H-I-S-S. It's basically the mispronunciation of cream cheese. But, you know, like, you go to, you know, any of the Indian street vendors and they will give you, a cream cheese sandwich. You will find some of them going, Krem Chiss sandwich. And it is adorable and it is so good. And yeah, it's kind of an ode a little bit to them. And it's amazing. I mean, I think personally it is amazing because I put together, along with my friend, a fantastic set of recommendations of movies from around the world. And you can basically like switch on and then, you know, dive into either the fan observations or just, you know, have a scene by scene analysis. And it really depends on our mood, what we're doing. But do check it out. I think you guys will like it.
Yes, I know you will like. My friend is so smart. And she is a engineer Barbie. And so she knows so many things. And she, the way you put ideas together and form thoughts
yeah.
is just so great. And so I highly recommend listening to anything that you have to say or anything you create. She's also a beautiful artist. Oh. And you can check out her art on Instagram.
Yeah, Sarabi13.
Spell it.
Sarabi, Surabhee, 13.
See, the H just came out of nowhere. So I'm glad you spelled it because I'm like, where did the H come from?
Oh, man. Oh, my God. The H
Anyways,
came out of nowhere.
I want to end by saying thank you to everyone listening and for people who check in with me on Instagram and anyone who supports me, anybody who is mentioning my name in rooms I am not in yet, I appreciate you. I thank you for your love and support. And I'll get back to you with another episode soon. And wow, look, we went for an hour and 13 minutes.
Yeah, because we are intellectual Barbies.
I love that for us. Until next time, Barbies. Love you.
Bye. Love you. I'm bad like the Barbie. I'm a doll, but I still wanna party. Pink felt like I'm ready to bend. I'm a 10, so I pull in a Ken. Like Jazzy, Stacy, Nikki. All of the Barbies is pretty. Damn. All of the Barbies is bad. It girls, and we ain't playing tag.